Well, the teachers in those earlier years when we were, those were the strongest and the most dynamic resources that any child could have is who's standing at the front of that room and teaching them. And every child, now Bush may say, you know, every child, leave no child behind. But during those years, you didn't. Those teachers brought everybody along.
And it
was never no chaos in her classroom, nothing. Mm-hmm. And if she was working on something very special, every teacher visited every home. Mm-hmm. And they worked with parents. You see, they lived in our communities. And they worked with us. They were in our Bible studies. They were in our churches. They were everywhere we were. And it was a demanding factor that you study and you get your lesson. Mm-hmm. You got that enforcement from the whole community. You remember I told you about when you get out of school?
And the mothers would be lining.
Yeah. And asking you about, what are you going to do? You get up in high school, they kept it in your face all the time. You know, your progress. What are you going to do? What do you want to be? You know, you're studying hard, and when you made your grade, they had parties.
Yeah.
Community parties. You know, like school closed out, yeah. We had community parties. You know, for kids that, and if they didn't make their grade, they helped them study. Nobody poked fun at anyone else. You know, not even their family, because they would help that family.
What's changed so much in the community?
It was almost like a family in the nucleus that where we were. You know, and when there was a family in need, the whole community, and don't go there and give it to them. We did not hear anything about welfare. The biggest thing I remember was the NRA, and that came about, and the CC camp came about under Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. And I remember the boys going off, you know, for that, and how that impacted the neighborhood. Because people were about to lose their home, but most of the people did not lose their home. Although that little red sign was on there, we would be running, and it's on her door, you know, when they come out and put that little sign on the mm-hmm. door, it was like they're about to lose their home, but people would step up, and white people would step up, whoever that family worked for, helping people save their home. I don't remember a single family losing their home.
Unfortunately, today it's not the same way.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about the black citizens going into the white to the white homes to work. Did the white people go into Brooklyn or Greenville or any of those areas, or did they stay out?
They would come when there was a parade, and they would go there if the people worked there. They went wherever people worked for them. They went to their home. Well, I mean, that was all over, you know. And up in, I learned later on, up in places like Comhatchet, you know, up in Huntersville, they sharecropped together. Mm-hmm. I guess you've heard that, and how they had land, and how they would help them purchase land, you know, and tell them about this land is going to be for sale, go buy it, how to go buy it. It was a dynamic relationship.
It was a very healthy relationship.
Mm-hmm. Like. Very healthy relationship. That was great.
What happened to the when Brooklyn was destroyed and the citizens were scattered? Did the other communities try to help them out, or what happened to them? Do you remember?
Well, they had a relocation policy, the same thing they had in Greenville. You know, they relocated the people where they wanted to move, and they were given money to relocate and housing, but it was still a method of control to where they relocated, you know, like to an all-black area. Because most of the people that were relocated on Bayesville Road. Hmm. You know, the doctors, but they didn't relocate the businesses there.
Just the
destroyed all of that. You know, like, you know, when you would go, now we did put up a grand theater. It was put on Bayesville Road, but see, the Lincoln Theater was still in Brooklyn, but see, the Lincoln was eventually closed, and then the Grand was closed, and that's when we started, you know, getting the integrations of all the theaters and things. But now the theaters was all owned by whites.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. But all the cafes and you know, the Undertakers and that sort of thing. Now, whatever facilities they had, we had them too. Mm. You know, like the library, the parks, they gave us ours. Mm. We had ours and the whites had theirs. You know, that theirs were far better, but we still had them.
You have to do what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
After the communities like Brooklyn and Greenville were destroyed, and Greenville was built up a little bit, how did that affect the black community in Charlotte after the fact?
Well, they felt, they gave us Greenville Center, and all of the areas that were torn down, that provided a place for, see, you know, we were knitted all the way. The Greenville Center was a place where they still today, you know, a lot of groups meet there. Because that is that's almost like the little nucleus that was in Brooklyn, where the Greenville people come together at the Greenville Center. They have more, and that was the center they left open, you know, like all day Sundays and Saturdays, and had big programs and things with the Greenville Center. Because people, even though they moved to Southeast Charlotte, they would have their meetings at Greenville Center, you know, and that was sort of like the hook for, you know, for people to come back together again.
To try to keep together.
Mm-hmm. And Greenville Center did that for them, but that's no longer the case now, you know. But that was when they first tore down, you know, the Brooklyn area and built, you know, most of the people that left Brooklyn built on Bayswater Road. Mm. You know, the doctors that lived there in Brooklyn, and that's the reason Bayswater Road became, and that area over there became the elite area for black, in the top part of Oakland Avenue.
Yeah.
You know, and that was right around the New West Charlotte High that they were built. You know, so, and then we did not, the doctor's office still stayed in Brooklyn. But the houses, the business stayed there, but the housing wasn't. And then eventually the business left and the business started. They did it in stages,
and
you know, for them to get ready. First they moved the homes, you know, and then they put Independence Boulevard through, you know.
How did the, we've talked about the ministers and the preachers standing up and saying, especially in Greenville, that what happened in Brooklyn wasn't going to happen again. Was there any, for lack of a better word, a threat behind it? Like, if this happens again?
It was not. And there again, I cannot say what the ministers, because they, whatever they negotiated with, it worked. You know, but I am sure that they did not go with threats. I'm sure they went with reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's my feeling.
Well, it'd be a good,
that's my feeling.
I hope so too.
But, and I know I had a real highly spiritual minister, Reverend J.M. Kennedy, you know, and he was the voice behind that. And Coleman Carey from Friendship, and Fidmount from, I can't remember where Fidmount was from, but Norman, he was from Greater Mount Sinai, but he wasn't here then. It was mostly Fidmount and Carey and J.M. Kennedy, to my knowledge, that would go down and talk. And they the one that changed and houses were put back in Greenville. That's as much as I know. And I know they put the houses back.
What was the response of the black community to Stan Brookshire?
Well, Stan Brookshire was straight up person. You know, he did not, he would tell you what he wanted you to know, and then he would he would reason and talk to, you know, the leaders in the black community. And our ministers was always the leaders in the black community. They would talk to him, you know, and that's what they would do now. And he had some things that I am sure that he had to argue, you know, but we never know. Yeah. At least I didn't.
Yeah. So it's kind of
what would do. But Stan Brookshire was a person that would stand up for citizens. Yeah. You know, and that I have always heard that. And say, you know, leaders like the Belt family, the Ivies, the Tallies, and, you know, it was just went on and on and on, you know.
What has the community now told the children growing up about the old communities that are gone, like Brooklyn?
Nothing. Yeah. That's where we are trying to establish a hands-on. I've been trying to do this for 15 years in African American Hands-On Museum. Because in my book, I really think that you cannot appreciate your own now if you don't know where you come from.
Exactly.
You know, that's my feeling. And the struggles that, and there were struggles, you know, that we went through, but it was not like the struggles from, you know, like people pressuring you, you know, or beating you, or you couldn't sleep in your house at night, or this sort of thing. It was the things that, and everybody was limited in resources. But the finest resources that we had, and I think on the other side too, and I cannot say this enough, it was the parents, and it was the resources in the school system. And the greatest resources was those teachers. Those teachers were, you know, you got their lesson. You know, one way or the other, you were going to study. And you did not, if you had to drop out of school, it was because that family was so destitute. But you did not drop out because you didn't pass, or that you were not accepted, or that you were not recognized as being somebody, you know, because they saw to it that you were pulled in with anybody. Nobody was left out. And you'd feel like, you know, that you didn't, not everybody had their little games, but it was not to the point that it would ruin a child's life, mm-hmm. You know. Because there was always the pretty one, there was always the football hero that ran after the pretty girl. But those little things, you know, they would go, but every child was recognized, and every child was accepted, and every child was given a special, you know, attention. And what we found out later on, if anybody was trying to shun, some child or mother teachers would get them. You know, you just didn't do that, but they would call you on the carpet about it. You know, that teacher, and they would go tell your parent too. They tell that child parent.
That's all those words.
Uh-huh. And them parents would usually, you know, be there. You know, but it just didn't. And the principal would move the child. You know, if it came down to that, because there was that relationship between every parent and the principal and the school. When the school gave any program, everybody was there. Everybody. That was the highlight. The church and the school was the force in the black community. And when they moved that, they killed it. That's what the damage. When they removed the school and when they removed the churches, then urban renewal came in. Because that was the black family, the church and the school.
Everything right there, mm-hmm. And it was just taken away. Mm-hmm. It just dropped out.
Why?
It's such a sad story, and just wish that more people, especially children of people, yeah, that they would know it.
And my pastor and I sit down, Reverend J.F. Kennedy, because I was really concerned about my children, because my children integrated the system. And I told my pastor, I said, you know, we're going about this wrong. Children, this should never be put on the backs of children. I said integration should be at the helm. You ought to be meeting with my Park Presbyterian Baptist people. I said it should start with you. As I'm looking at you as a Moses, and that's where you ought to be. And he agreed, you know, that that's where it should be. We should not put integration on the back of our children. That was wrong. I still say it was wrong. I feel we in that dilemma today because we did it wrong, you know. Because I don't think you should send a child to do a man's job. And if we had done that, and we worked and worked, and we said a long years ago, the only way that this is when the Moses meet, and I call the ministers the Moses, and then the ministers do the economic development in their own churches, you know, because those are the men that have the business and this sort of thing, and in the education part. And then, you know, do something about community. I try to pair communities with communities to come in and meet and pair and work with them and work with communities where we could be in more harmony, you know, with each other. And then we wanted to, I was saying to my men, it's only one way that this is going to work. It's going to be through housing, you know, developing housing where, and you don't have to live right next door to a multimillionaire, but, and I know he don't want your house there, but it ought to be where somewhere in that vicinity where you go to school, the kids could go to school. You're not, you know, and you could get the benefit of that kind of relationship.
The neighborhood schooling program.
They did it in Huntsville. Mm-hmm. And it worked beautiful, you know, up there. You know, and that was a pilot program that they did up there, and that was really great. And as far as we know, there was even in one subdivision up there, the houses that, you know, the ones that they built, like Jimmy Carter, you know, built up there. He even had some of those developed, you know, where the people could be. And you look at Reedy Creek, it's sort of like Reedy Creek. You can have some multi-million houses up here, but all the kids go to the same school. And that's the only way that we are going to see is going to be development through housing. And if we had done that, you know, we would be far along. We are more segregated now than we've ever been in the school system, you know. And the resources are not there for the children, you know. So that is that's one real big disadvantage that I have found that we have lost, you know, with that. And I truly feel that the prison system is running over because of what we lost, you know, in that, because we've lost so many, especially African-American boys, you know, they cannot cope with the system the way it is, you know, and they have been dealt a hand that they can't play, you know, so they drop out of school, you know, and then, you know, they out in the street, next thing you know, they locked up. I think that's why the jails are so crowded.
You lose mm-hmm. a soul like the community.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I just, I feel very sad about it because I think if we had integrated another way, you know, and still had them strong teachers, mm-hmm. you know, up there to manage them. Because most of the, you know, when they put, And they mean well, and it's all well and good, but they just don't understand the culture and the development, you know, and they can't handle it, you know.
So much for a young mind mm-hmm. to accept.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I've wasted enough of your time.
Yeah.